Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to turn our attention today to meadows and prairies and how you can develop a meadow or a prairie, perhaps in an urban area or maybe in a suburban area. That's kind of the title of Catherine Zimmerman's book. It's called Urban and Suburban Meadows, Bringing Meadowscaping to Big and to Small Places. She's a sustainable landscape designer, meadowscaping consultant, certified horticulturist, and Northeast Organic Farmers Association accredited organic land care professional. And she's the author of Urban and Suburban Meadows and published by Matrix Media. So I'm really glad to have her back and with us once again to talk about establishing and caring for meadows and prairies. Catherine, are you there?
I'm very. Good morning.
Good morning. Great. She's with us by phone, obviously. Great to have you with us. And I'm really enjoying your book. With lots of good content and also some great photos that really help show us what to do.
Well, I think it's important for people to see how beautiful meadows and prairies can be.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk a bit about your book and how it's organized.
Well, the book came about teaching an organic land care class at the USDA Graduate School. It's been about 3 years ago now. And I thought, you know, my background is I'm a video photographer for like 35 years and a still photographer. And I felt that I could make my class really exciting by going out there and sort of showing the class what are possibilities, especially in lawn alternatives. And so this whole book and there's an accompanying video grew out of that class. The book is, the reason I wrote the book was because I really couldn't find any information all in one place that showed people exactly how to plant a prairie or a meadow. It was all scattered about, and I wanted to bring it all together, and I wanted to show people how easy it is to do and how little maintenance there is when you do have an established meadow and how beneficial to the landscape a meadow or prairie can be. So it's organized in a fashion that steps you right through the process from choosing the site to preparing the site and designing, planting, and maintaining. And the way this was to go out to meadow experts. I didn't know anything about making meadows when I started this book. So I went to three meadow experts and then also Doug Tallamy to talk about the importance of native plants and native insects. So that's basically how it's laid out. And then it has extensive resources in the back of the book arranged by region and broken into states. And it also has extensive plant lists that people can get a running start on doing their own meadow or prairie. The plant lists can be expanded by your local experts, and it's really a starting point to plant your natural landscape.
You know, it's interesting, as I was looking over your list of experts, Neil Diebel of Prairie Nursery is actually one of a frequent guest on my Friday Garden Talk show, and Doug Tallamy was a guest, I think it was September 3rd, and Larry Wiener and Michael Nadal have been members who have been contributors to the show, too. So
it is a small world, isn't it?
In my mind, you caught the right people.
Yeah, well, I was having a conversation with Neil one day, and I have been networking all over the country to really get images, you know, of places in the Southwest and the Northwest. And Neil says to me, is there anyone you haven't talked to? And I thought for a minute, and I thought, I don't think so. I think I've talked to about everybody. But I did have some good guidance from, like, Mike Nadeau really put me on to Larry Wiener, who then sent me to and Neil Diebel. And you know, it's just one of those little hopscotching, you know, events to get to the right people. And I think I did get the right people on this project, and they really represent a cross-section, because Neil's out where you have prairies, and Larry and Mike are in the east, and Doug is, you know, done fabulous research on native plant, native insect connection. So I think that the book is just filled with really good information and some eye-opening things that I don't think people understand. I think that there's just so much education that we need to do to get people to understand how very important natural landscapes are, you know, to our ecosystems.
Yeah, you talk about that early in the book.
Right.
Why should we do this?
Right. Well, here's my big take on what's going on out there in the landscape world. It's composed mostly of non-native grasses, and the grass, it's a monoculture, basically, and no diversity, and it, so by virtue of that alone, there's no food for our insects, and if we don't have insects, then there's no food for the birds, and we start to lose species, and we already have lost a lot of species. When you plant a meadow, you plant a diverse ecosystem that
right.
supports a diversity of insects and birds. So we need to reduce lawn. I'm not saying got to get rid of all lawn, but we have acres and acres and acres of chemically maintained lawns across the country. And, you know, I just think that people, it's easy. You know, they just go to the store and there's four steps, and we just need to make doing meadows just as easy so people
yeah.
understand that this is a way to go, and it's got lots and lots of benefits.
Well, we have callers online. Again, you can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. But let's go to Dan in Partyville, who's been waiting a bit here. Dan, thank you very much for calling.
Good morning. I've got two related questions. I've been working on a prairie garden on my little hobby farm for the last 5 years. I've got an established part in the middle of my big garden. It's probably 15 by 15. I must have 10 different kinds of plants, but I didn't prepare it right, so I've got quack grass everywhere. Is there a good way to get rid of that in an established bed?
You know, one of the things that I find that, I always approach everything organically, and so I think that one of the most important things we can do is, A, get a really good weed book, and find out what the culture of that plant is, because you can, meadow plants, fortunately, are very adaptable plants. They like poor soil. Your soil may be too rich. Go and just research quack grass and see what conditions it likes, because maybe you're providing the condition that it likes. So you may lower the pH of the soil or that kind of thing, because you can remove it, but if you don't change the condition, it'll come back. So my best advice is get good weed books that you can go and look at and first identify your problem, and then you can go out there and attack it because you understand the plant. If we took a little more time to understand the plant, then we could, you know, eliminate all toxic, you know, elements that we're putting into our gardens.
Quack grass is probably one of the most pernicious weeds that I can think of, and it is extremely, you can't pull it, because when you pull it, it just
right.
spreads,
it breaks. Uh-huh.
breaks up and spreads. And do you ever use chemicals?
Not really.
No?
I mean, I try to avoid. I have. And let me just say, I used chemicals for years and years until I realized I just had a sort of a light bulb turned on one day, and I realized that I was doing it backward. I wasn't looking at the underlying causes of the problem. You know, and a lot of times it's cultural practices. Like, for example, in your lawn, you mowed too low. You didn't water deep enough, and so you actually end up causing a problem. So I started to just look at the landscape as, you know, these problems are telling me there's something wrong with the soil, and what I need to do is find out what that something is and take care of it and promote the healthy soil, because when you use chemicals, they're really out of your control. To me, it's cumulative. Just like a bad practice is cumulative, so are the good practices. But when you use chemicals and everybody else is doing it, you may think you're the only one out there squirting some herbicide, you know, on a plant, but so is everybody else. And so it accumulates, it goes into the waters, and I couldn't justify doing that to the earth anymore. And I find that I have healthy soil. I have a backyard that is noisy and alive, and you know, I know I'm not poisoning the earth, and I think that's my message, is that once we educate ourselves to how we can take care of these things, you know, with good cultural practices and organic techniques, I think we can get rid. We're going to see in the future. We're going to look back and say, "Wow, that was really unenlightened what we were doing back then," and we're finding it now. We're seeing that lots of different agencies, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, they're, you know, basically providing funds to farmers to plant conservation buffers or meadows to help remediate a lot of the pollutant runoff and to basically give habitat to pollinators, especially as we're losing our honeybees. We need to have alternatives to those pollinators, and we do have a lot, and we just haven't done the research, and there's some really good research just starting. In fact, I'm going to be involved in it in Pennsylvania. We're going to start, they're doing a 3-year study to monitor the pollinators and to identify pollinators that can handle the crops that are now being pollinated by honeybees. So there's a lot of exciting stuff happening and a lot of effort going into really trying to understand the natural ecosystems rather than fighting it and doing it sort of backward, you know, and using, see, the chemicals are what got us into the problem in the first place.
Yep. No. All right. Dan, I thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
Holly in Milwaukee has a question or comment. Holly, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is really interesting to me. First, in answer to the last caller, I have a great book that I recommend. I actually have it with me. I'm taking it up north. I have some land in Oconto County. The book is called Invasive Plants of the Upper Midwest. It's an illustrated guide to their identification and control. And it's written by Elizabeth Zarapata. And it's Czarapata, and I found it's really helpful. But my question was, what's the difference between a prairie and a meadow? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Okay, what's the difference, Catherine?
Well, Holly, there's not huge differences. They have both. Well, first off, prairie is the French word for meadow. So they have the same types of plant communities, but prairies are found in the midwest of North America, sort of the center to the west. Meadows are found in the east, where the forest, the canopy, has been opened up by fire or agriculture is generally the way most of the trees were taken down. And then meadows move in, and meadows are really a temporary community that, if you know, it weren't for us keeping, you know, beating back the woody plants by mowing or burning, that meadow would just turn back into a forest eventually through succession of plants. A prairie is there's not as much forest in the Midwest section of the country due to rainfall. And so you still have to keep the woody plants down, but it's much more likely that it will maintain and be a prairie without a lot of intervention, as in the east, you know, it's going to turn back into a forest eventually. So that, and they have, you know, cousins, you know, there's different plants that are native to the Midwest that are not found in the east at all. So I recommend people really pay attention to the plants that are native to your area, because they're going to be much more likely to thrive in that condition rather than taking a plant from California and trying to put it into a meadow in
Wisconsin.
Right, exactly, or, you know, New York or Maryland. So that's primarily the difference. It's, you know, in the prairies you have a higher amount of warm season grasses. You have more cool season grasses in the east, and it's all, you know, really has to do with the climate. And as you get, as you go farther west, the prairies get shorter grasses and taller grasses to the east, where there's more rainfall. So those are basically They're basically the same type of ecological communities.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Zimmerman, our guest, sustainable landscape designer and author of Urban and Suburban Meadows, Bringing Meadowscaping to Big and Small Spaces. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Author Catherine Zimmerman, our guest today by phone, as we talk with her about establishing and caring for meadows and prairies, talking about her new book, Urban and Suburban Meadows. Thank you for listening in. Question? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Catherine, an email from Peter, who says he's having trouble establishing a prairie on his clay soil. Any suggestions for dealing with clay soils?
Well, you really want to get plants that the very first thing you need to do is really, when you're establishing a meadow or prairie, is to do a site analysis. And if you have clay soil, there are plants, baptisia, you know, false blue indigo, and other plants that have a really great tap roots that will bust up the clay soil. You need to, of course, get rid of all the vegetation that's there initially, and then you can seed on that soil. But you may need to use some plug plants and those kinds of plants that are already established. I don't know what his site looks like. It would be handy to really know more about the site to understand what might be the problem. It might not be the clay soil.
Yeah, it could be something else.
It could be. I mean, it could be a slope. It could be lots of things. It depends on also how did he remove the vegetation. So I think I need a little bit more information to know about. But there are good, and in fact, if you go to Neil DeBoll's website, he has a wonderful section on clay busting plants. So I recommend his website at prairienursery.com as a wonderful resource. And as if Peter is local, go visit Neil, because he's got a lot of good answers for some of these, and he's got the plants.
Well, and also in your book, you talk about establishing a meadow or prairie with seed or with live plants, and we got lots of pictures, I think, involving Neil in there, as a matter of fact, as I look at
it. Well, Neil was great. Neil, I came out to see Neil several times during this process, and he came east once, and so we've had a lot of collaboration, and Neil takes care of really being my expert on planning and maintenance of a meadow or prairie. But yes, I mean, you can approach your prairie or meadow planning several ways, and one is the choice of whether you're going to seed it or whether you're going to use live plants. In a bigger area, you're probably going to want to seed because it's less costly. The sort of downside is that it takes about 3 years to establish, and you need to have a mowing regimen. I lay it all out in the book there. If you have a smaller area and you want, you know, like the immediate meadow garden, you can go with plugs, which are small sort of seedlings almost that you can plant, or you can go with bigger container plants and, you know, keep them watered until they're established. So there are a couple of ways to approach it. The problem with the second approach is it is more money, but you get a meadow a lot faster.
Yep, you sure do. Lori and Krivitz, we turn to you now. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I have the opposite problem that he has. I have all sand up here, but I'm hoping that your guest can help me with a plant that I saw not too far from where I live. It's only maybe a quarter of a mile. I've noticed it just in sandy soil. Even this, really, it's just a sand pit. And I don't know what the summer foliage or flowers on this plant look like. I didn't notice it until this fall when the stems all turned a deep, dark purple. It was really pretty. It's about maybe a foot high. I took it down to the Green Bay Extension office, and they can't identify it because they don't know what the summer foliage looked like or flowers or anything. But I thought maybe because it turns purple in the fall, maybe there's some distinguishing factor there that somebody would know immediately what it is.
You know, I do not know based on what you've told me. Again, I think that if you try to go out and get a book that really has your local plants, it may be an invasive plant and it may be a meadow plant. You may have to wait until spring to find out. But there are a lot of plants that, you bring up a good point, there are a lot of plants that do well in sandy conditions. So it is the best idea to get the right plant for that condition. And there are plants out there, and I list them in my book under the dry soil condition.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Martha in Glendale next. Hi, Martha.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I'm fine, thank you. I love this show. This is really a neat thing. We have a completely natural garden in our 60 by 110 suburban lot in Glendale. And over 100 species are growing here. They are all native southeastern Wisconsin species. And the people who wonder about sand or clay have to realize that everything here was covered with vegetation. You know, whether it was clay or sand or any other, or any mixture of those, there are things that will grow there. And there is a Prairie Future Seed Company from Menominee Falls. Randy Power is a proprietor, and he will come out and do a consultation for you, and he will tell you what will grow in your soil, what will grow on your site, I should say, because now my house runs at the front of Sunny and the back of the woodland, so there's all kinds of things. And also, I would like to say for the crabgrass, that is an annual grass. If you keep cutting it down and let the native, to give the natives room to grow, it will disappear. It's a transient. It'll just disappear.
And that goes to the point that I was telling Dan when he called about that. If you look at your plant and you find out it's an annual, like, you know, thistles, a lot of biennials, and all, if you just prevent that plant from seeding, you know, it's gone in 2 years, and that's it. You, if you understand the plant's life cycle and the condition it likes, you can go a long way toward, you know, controlling the issues, you know, on your property.
There you go.
Well, the problem with pulling that, which you can, is you're frequently pulling up native little tiny seedlings, little tiny sprouts. So all you really have to do is cut them, and especially in a small garden like that, you can do that by hand, and they'll just disappear.
Yeah. They'll be starved out, essentially, won't they, Catherine?
Yes, and the meadow plants will, you know, really take over if you give them a chance to. They will outcompete the invasive plants. And in fact, when you do plant with seed and you mow over the 2 to 3 year period until the prairie is established, that's what really knocks back the weeds, is that they cannot get up there to the seeding stage or the flowering stage, and they don't have any more energy for their roots. They need that top foliage to really produce strong root system. So, you know, they'll disappear.
Yep, they will. Thank you, Martha, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call as we talk with Catherine Zimmerman about her book, Urban and Suburban Meadows, and about establishing and caring for meadows and prairies. 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Sue in Waupaca next. Sue, hello.
Hello. I have a question. I'd like to amend my soil. I know that it is acidic in spots because it does have sheep sorrel growing in it. And I've done my research on wood ash because we do heat with wood, and I know that that can really be difficult on soil. And I would like you to address that. And also, if you could speak to the hazards of wood ash near water where there might be runoff.
Now, I'm a little confused. You want to amend your soil because it's acidic?
Yes, it is acidic. I know it's acidic because of sheep sorrel is a common indicator plant that shows that the soil has is acidic. And I'd like to sweeten the soil, and I know that wood ash is one such amendment that will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are you planting there? Are you planting a meadow?
Well, I do have prairie right up against my area, and I do have a garden, and I do have prairie plants, and I would like to, basically for the vegetable area, though, but I do have a problem with the wood sorrel that it's growing right up along the edge of the meadow prairie and growing into my garden, and I would like to sweeten that soil. But I also know that that area is not close to water, but where there are areas close to water, I'm aware that there is a runoff situation, but I cannot find that anywhere, that there is a caution about wood ash going into water.
You know, I really don't have the answer to that one, but if you are sweetening the soil because you want to plant a meadow plant or a prairie plant there, you don't really need to do that. They like more acidic conditions because they don't need the nutrients that another garden plant might require. So, and if you have an area where you've got water, I would strongly recommend planting a buffer zone with prairie plants to remediate any runoff that you might have. The prairie plants' root systems will help to keep that from going into the water. But I'm not familiar with the wood ash issues.
There are there's some dangers of using wood ash, especially if you use too much. You have to be a little careful. And there, I think, are some recommendations I've seen online. We've probably talked about it on the program, too, and I've forgotten what those recommendations are. But you do need to be a little careful about how much wood ash you would be applying to any particular land area. And so, as you're saying, Catherine, maybe it's better just to try and get rid of the weeds that you have there and then plant prairie plants that would appreciate that kind of soil.
Well, I think this is basically the way I like to work, is to look at the land that you're working with, you know, analyze what you have, and then put the right plant there instead of trying to prop up that area with amendments or changing it and altering it. If we kind of learn to work with what we have there, it's a lot less effort in the end, and you've got some beautiful plants that you can put there. And you know, if you have any doubt that you're going to be contaminating a waterway, then I certainly wouldn't, use that kind of a contaminant.
All right, there we go. Thank you for calling, Sue. Appreciate it. Let's go to Margaret in Eau Claire, Wisconsin next. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. We have a fairly established prairie, but years ago when we bought the land, we planted autumn olive for the birds, thinking it was going to be a good thing.
Oh, dear.
And autumn olive and sumac are invading the prairie, and what I've been told to do is cut them down and paint them with Roundup, but is there another way to stop them?
That's a good question. I would try not to use the Roundup. And, you know, the thing is, I know there's an organic method of doing that, and I'm just not sure what that one is. Did anyone suggest that you burn it?
Well, we're afraid to.
No.
You know, I mean, that's what people say, is that you should burn your prairies. But, you know, there's houses in the, not real close, but our house is fairly close to it, and mm-hmm. we're just a little leery of trying to do a controlled burn.
Right, because I think that will take care of that particular plant. And you have found that you can't remove it manually? Oh,
there's so many of them.
Oh, there are?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's going to be an autumn olive forest before too long.
Oh.
Do me. I guess, and that goes to the point of trying, that's one reason mowing prairies and that kind of management keeps the woody plants down to begin with, so they don't get a stranglehold on your property.
It is mowed every fall. You know, he mows the whole prairie every fall.
So it does. Has he tried a blowtorch?
Well, that was my other suggestion, just the spot. And that's what I was thinking when I said burning, to take a propane torch and try to just do the affected area, hosing down all the areas around that particular plant so you don't catch anything else on fire.
So would you cut it down and then blowtorches?
I would try that, and also digging. But I'm not the expert on that particular management, so I defer to. And again, you might want to call. You say you already had an expert out, but they recommended a more toxic approach.
We have not. No,
oh, okay.
This is just what friends have told us to .
I would try to find a local organics guy there who may be able to tell you the best organic approach to that, especially as you have so many of them. I don't know if you want to be putting down that much pesticide to take care of, all these plants.
The only thing I can think of is a blowtorch.
Yeah. I would love to look into that for you if you want to leave your number,
sure.
With Larry there. I can certainly try to help you on that.
Okay, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
Thanks, Margaret.
Let's see if we can put you on hold there, and I think I've got you on hold. Let's go to, and Jim will get to you, Margaret.
Okay.
Let's go to Anna in Fox Point.
Hi, I was calling because I've been trying to establish some hairy wild petunia in my front yard, and that's it's a Wisconsin native, and it has turned all brown and crisp on me. I'm wondering if that is normal at this time of the year, or if I need to start over next year.
What plant was this?
It's a hairy wild petunia.
Oh, petunia.
Yes.
It may well just be its cycle. Have you had that plant for more than a year?
No, this is my first year.
Oh, well, it probably has just died back for the season.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
And will come back. I mean, that's,
that's
what I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. Not to worry. It'll be okay.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Anna. Thanks for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or email at talk@wpr.org. And Roger in Spring Green up next. Hi, Raj.
Hi. A couple comments on blowtorch and wood ashes, and I have a question. On wood ashes, I did some research and calculations, and I came up with, for an amendment to the soil, not trying to change its pH, but just as an amendment, it should be no more than 1/4 inch of ashes every couple years.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's very,
very
little.
Small amount.
In terms of using a blowtorch on autumn olive or any other perennial or woody shrubs, what you're really doing, you can cut it down. You're really doing a kind of smother technique. You're going to cut it down or blowtorch it, and it's going to kill all the leaf vegetation, but it's going to resprout. It's going to take a year or two of at least once a month blowtorching all the
right.
sprout.
That's right.
It'll work because if they don't have leaves, they don't get nutrients to their roots, then they will die. But it's
exactly.
A long process, not a one-time treatment.
Right.
And a question in terms of establishing, I didn't miss the beginning, but I do a process called lasagna gardening where you do a mulch, where you do heavy mulching to kill the existing vegetation. Any thoughts on using that for people who are trying to get rid of quack grass, annual creeping Charlie, all those perennial grasses that might exist in a lawn or all those perennial weeds? Any comments, or have you used a technique where for a year you might put down 12 to 14 inches of heavy mulch with a cardboard smother layer, do an annual flower garden, and then in one growing season you've killed everything with no chemicals? Any thoughts?
That's my number one method of the smother technique of preparing a site. It's doesn't disturb the landscape. I wouldn't use a lot of mulch if you're doing a meadow or a prairie garden, because we don't want the soil to be too rich. So generally what I do is lay down cardboard newspaper, like 5 layers of newspaper. I actually go and get big end rolls from the newspaper place where when they get done printing, they've got like 30 yards of unused newsprint. So it's a lot easier to put that down rather than opening up a bunch of other, papers that you've got laying around. But put down like 5 layers of that or 1 layer of cardboard, and then put on like 2 inches of mulch. and it can take up to a year to kill the vegetation. I've planted within, you know, sometimes weeks, and what I do is just cut a slit. If you're seeding, you do have to have bare ground, but if you're planting live plants or plugs, you can just cut a slit in the smother material, put the plant in, and put the, you know, the cardboard or the smother material back up to the plant to keep any, you know, weeds or grass or anything that might be there from sprouting. And I've been very successful using that method. It's cheap, it's not toxic, and,
yeah,
you know, it's organic.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Horry in Boyceville, on to you now. Thanks for calling.
Hello. How's it going today?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Margaret just called in about her prairie going to wood.
Yep.
And you guys mentioned controlled burn.
Yep.
I know I grew up around Barron, and I had friends on the fire department. They were more than willing for free to do wild burns like that because it gave them free practice and to learn wildfires.
You
so
know,
I would call the local fire department if I was Margaret.
Well, and that's funny because I make that suggestion in the book for the very reason that you talked about, that fire departments do need to do practice burns. And so, you know, I don't know if they do it right inside a very populated area, but it's definitely worth a call.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Catherine Zimmerman, our guest today, sustainable landscape designer, meadowscaping consultant, and author of Urban and Suburban Meadows, Bringing Meadowscaping to Big and Small Spaces. It's published by Matrix Media. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ken, if you'd like to join our conversation as we talk establishing and caring for meadows and prairies with our guest Catherine Zimmerman, the number 1-800-642-1234. And Peter in Eau Claire, we turn to you now. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Peter.
I'm just calling about controlling some obnoxious weeds that may come up in your prairie because I had a small prairie patch. And I know this has been talked about before, but one way you can do it on a non-windy day, if it's a broadleaf, like thistles always seem to get into everything, is to put on a rubber glove like you use for washing dishes, put a cotton glove over it, and then a high concentration of Roundup, and then you just dip your fingers in that and just touch the leaves that you want to get rid of and do it on, obviously, on a non-windy day. And that takes care of, you know, spot areas of weeds that you don't want.
And I would suggest that you can do the same thing with an organic herbicide. The organic herbicides don't go into the soil. And, you know, I know you're just painting the plant, but the organic herbicides affect the cuticle and burn the cuticle of the plant so they can't photosynthesize and effectively kills it. It may take a couple of applications, but it's not toxic, and yeah. It's kind of the way I like to go.
Which ones do you commonly use,
well,
Catherine?
Well, Burnout is a good organic herbicide to use in really hot, humid days. It works best on herbaceous plants. Scythe is another one that you can use on cooler days, and it's derived from the pot geranium, actually. Most of these have like vinegar, cloves, those kinds of ingredients that, as I say, they destroy the cuticle of the plant, and therefore the plant cannot live. It needs its foliage to survive and photosynthesize and to feed the root system. So repeated applications will totally get rid of it.
And, of course, it's always good to remember that even though it's organic, it still can be dangerous to the individual. And
yeah,
you definitely have to
read the labels, and I always recommend using goggles and gloves and be very careful about where you store any of these kind of products.
Peg in Rice Lake, we turn to you now. Hi, Peg.
Hi there. I think I may know the kind of plant this woman who called was looking for.
With a blue stem?
purple foliage.
Oh, purple foliage. Yeah, sorry.
Well, I found one like that up on my hill long ago, and it's beautiful. And I wanted to transplant it, but I was not up to the shovel work, and so I didn't. But I did look it up on the web, and I came up with Red Osier, O-S-I-E-R. And when I looked it up today just to check it before I called, they ran it all together into one word, R-E-D-O-S-I-E-R. Mm-hmm. And they called it a dogwood.
Oh, it's a dogwood. Okay. Red Osier.
Oh, red oh, Osier dogwood. Okay.
And it has beautiful big white berries sometime during the summer.
Yeah, and it can be a very large plant. Like, it can get 25 feet tall. Yeah. And how big is the one that you, if it's the same plant?
Well, the ones I saw weren't that big, but they were competing in the woods, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not as big there. But, yes, it's called a red twig dogwood. And it's a beautiful winter interest is the red stems.
And it has been cultivated as an ornamental, I understand.
Yeah, red osier dogwood.
Well, it's a native plant, so mm-hmm. it's a beauty.
Yes. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Peg. And that gives our caller from earlier a chance to go online and type that in and see if it looks like the plant she saw. Sounds good. Thank you very much. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to John in Jacksonport next. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Simple question. I have some English ivy and another kind of ivy, one in one place on my fence and the other place on my garage. It's grown beautifully, and I really like that. Question, as all the leaves are off, and it's this dry, brittle stuff that's, intertwined. Can I cut that off? Should I cut that all off way down to the ground? Close to the ground, I don't mean down into 6-8 inches from the ground, or do I just ignore it?
So this is a plant that's intertwining with your English ivy?
That it's what?
That's twined into the English ivy that you don't want, right?
No.
No, it's the English ivy itself.
Oh, I see. Huh. Yeah. So you're just saying the leaves are off right now and it looks like it's dead or is
it looks like it's kind of done for the season, yeah.
Well, I mean, if you cut it back, then it's going to take a while to grow back. I mean, definitely you want to keep it trimmed away from your roof line and that kind of thing. I'm not quite sure I understand what you're asking exactly. Is it just for neatness? Is that what you're thinking?
I was wondering whether I should cut it back and way down to 6-8 inches from the ground and then remove, the dead ivy branches.
I have my own take on English ivy, and, growing on, I don't know what your structure is, if it's brick or whatever, but it can really damage the structure because it really does take hold, and I would probably not even put it on the structure to begin with, maybe plant another native vine there instead and use a trellis or something like that. If you like the English ivy look on your building, then, it's going to take a little while for that to come back and cutting it, you'll see if it's really died or if it's really dead or if it's just dormant. So it's really a personal choice as to whether you like that look, but I think it can be harmful to your structure.
All right. There you go. Thank you for calling. Bonnie in Green Bay, we are on to you now. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Larry and Catherine.
Hello.
Hello. This is Bonnie in Green Bay, Catherine. I can't wait to get your book.
Well, thank you. Bonnie, that's my middle name.
Ah. Well, here we go. I missed the very beginning, but when I'm driving around out in the country, I'm amazed at how many acres are mowed. And I just wonder if you've addressed how much air pollution really we do get from gasoline-powered lawnmowers. I've read statistics but don't remember them. But the meadow is just such a nice, friendly way to get away from some of that air pollution. Do you remember any of those statistics, Catherine?
I do. All I know is there are millions and millions of pounds of commercial fertilizers and pesticides applied to lawns every year, because lawns are basically composed of non-native species that, you know, go dormant in that are cool season grasses that go dormant in the summer. And what ends up happening is a lot of people, they take a lot of maintenance and a lot of inputs to be maintained at that level that people adore, which is a nice green expanse of lawn. They don't offer many more benefits than just looking at them if you prefer a green lawn. But the lawnmowers are one of the most polluting engines out there. It's a two-cycle engine, and it does indeed. I don't know the statistics, but if you think about all the hundreds of mowers out there polluting every week, whereas a meadow, you mow it once a year, and rather than 12 or 18 times over the growing season for a lawn. So indeed, there's a lot of pollution going on, and not only that, but noise pollution. I live in a very urban area, and the cacophony of, you know, mowers, blowers, you know, you name it, going on, weed trimmers, all to maintain lawn. It's astounding, and they could be sitting around looking at a beautiful meadow all day, you know, with their iced tea.
Well, we have, at our place, we have a combination. So, of course, we have a relatively small lawn, but we use a push non-motor lawnmower at our place.
I love it.
A little more exercise that way, but we can still mow it in about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and it's all done.
There's totally a love affair with riding lawnmowers. I have many clients who would never give up their lawn, you know, and it's a hard sell sometimes, but I think people are going to really rethink some of these practices, and I think it's really about the education. You know, I think once we find out what all this is doing, all these inputs are actually doing to the earth, and how we can really be a part of changing that whole culture, I think that people are going to, you know, they're going to think of natural landscapes as a sort of the new landscaping norm, I hope, in the very near future.
All right. Let's take a call from Lou in Richmond, Illinois next. Hi, Lou.
Thank you. Hi. Thanks for your program. I enjoy it. And it's so bizarre. This is not a question related to prairies, though I greatly appreciate prairies. I have traditional plants in my garden, and I couldn't believe it when you talked about wood ash, because I had just finished going out with a bag of wood ashes from last winter and just throwing them into my peony plants haphazardly, you know, handfuls at a time. And then I heard something that led me to believe that was a terrible mistake.
Well, I think the caller, if you were going to use wood ashes, you should not apply it very, very heavily at all to the soil. Is that right, Catherine?
Exactly. And I've made, by the way, Lou, I've made the same mistake. And it sort of goes to what I've been talking about, which is, you know, we often don't know what we're doing. And, you know, we think we know. Like, I thought I was really doing a good job as a gardener in the past, and then I realized that I was really killing a lot of things that I didn't even know existed. So the internet is a wonderful tool to really go out and find out, you know, Google those questions, and you get some answers right away. And we have the technology today makes it so much more easy for us to really find out the information we need before we go out and do something that we later say, oh my God, why did I do that? You know, well, that was not too smart. You know?
Well, I realize that now, and I'm going to have to take measures to undo what I just did. But thanks for your information.
Well, thank you for caring about the environment. That is a really important piece. We all have to do more of that.
Well, I do very much. I belong to the local environmental groups, and I'm going to watch those wood ashes from now on.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Lou. By the way, Catherine, how's the book been going?
The book has been going really well. I had the opportunity to be on the Today Show, and and we shot up to number one on Amazon, so that was very nice when you type in Meadows, so I'm very pleased with that. It's been an interesting journey because I self-published the book, and this is something I knew nothing about. A babe in the woods on that score, but I'm learning many more aspects of publishing, and it's been great. I mean, I'm traveling all over, speaking. You know, I was in Florida, last month, and I'm going up to Delaware tomorrow to do workshops in establishing Meadows. I'm in Pittsburgh.
Been fun.
It's been fun. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm loving it.
Catherine Zimmerman, our guest today. She is the author of Urban and Suburban Meadows, Bringing Meadowscaping to Big and Small Spaces. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. We're visiting with Catherine Zimmerman, sustainable landscape designer and author of her book, Urban and Suburban Meadows, Bringing Meadowscaping to Big and Small Spaces. So we're zeroing in on meadows and prairies today with her as much as we can, and certainly invite your questions at 800-642-1234 or via email at talk@wpr.org. And lots of callers online, Catherine. So let's go to Joe in Sturgeon Bay. Hello, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got some land outside of town, and I have an acre that I planted sunflowers on last year. I just broadcast seeded them and disked them under, and they produced a nice field of sunflowers last year. And I thought this year what I wanted to do is, well, I should say in the spring, is disk it up and this fall, disc in seeds or leaves for, I guess, fertilizer. And then I know some people have walnuts laying around their yard and some acorns. If I broadcast those out there and disc them in, are those going to grow in the trees, or will trees only grow, I don't know, will it work?
I think you will get some seedlings, but I'm absolutely, not really sure about your tree planting, but I think that if you planted a walnut, you're going to get a tree.
I've done it before, and I've never seen results, and I thought, well, maybe, I only planted 20 of them, and I thought, well, they never came up. And obviously, if a tree drops, 1,000 acorns, they're not all going to grow in the tree, so maybe there's only selective ones. So that's when I had the idea, if I did a whole field and just broadcast them, disked it up. And then also, those sunflowers that are left behind, there's a few seeds remaining. If I disk those under, are those going to replant themselves and grow again also?
They will reseed themselves. Are you getting a lot of weeds with your disking and all that? If we're planting meadows, for example, we tend not to disk up the area just because it brings up a lot of weed seeds, which when you're trying to establish a meadow or a prairie, you'll be beating back weeds because a lot of seeds are there in the soil, and when they're exposed to the sunlight, then you've got a bumper crop of weeds when you're trying to, plant a meadow. So
right.
Generally we try not to disturb the site. I'm sorry I don't know about your walnut question, but we had a farm, and we've had some chestnuts, and we were able to get the chestnuts to grow from just the nuts. So that was a successful project. But again, if you're doing a meadow, I would try not to disk.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Joe. And we have Don emailed us to ask if a meadow or a prairie system can be installed on a mound septic system.
Absolutely. It's actually a really great way to deal with that area because you can't plant trees there. But the meadow plants are not going to interfere with the septic system. There's a lot of information actually online about that, and they recommend it.
Yeah, I would echo that.
I think Neil has something on his site, in fact, about that.
Yeah, at the Prairie Nursery.
Right.
Yeah. The Prairie Nursery site is really an excellent site.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's an excellent resource. And there's another resource Donna had emailed us. the Wild Ones website.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
WildOnes.org is another great site for information for people.
And I list them in the resource section of the book as an excellent resource. And they've been around for a long time, and they have a lot of good information, especially about weed ordinances and that kind of thing, and how to deal with some of those situations. So, they, in fact, they're having their conference is coming up on the East Coast here in early November. I think it's November 5th or 6th.
There you go. Let's go to Leroy in Mineral Point next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello. I've got a couple questions for her. I can make it brief and get a nice answer.
Okay.
How do you begin? What do you do to turn a fairly good-sized yard into something like you said you had, where it takes me minutes to mow it, and I have a very small portion of it still mowed to size, lawn type thoughts.
Okay.
It turned much more of it into meadow.
Well, the first thing you want to do is basically do a site analysis, and what that means is you need a sunny area for a meadow, so that's the number one thing. Do you have enough sun? It usually takes a half day for meadow plants. That's what they need, like 6 hours. So if you have that condition, you're partway there. Is it sloping? Is it flat? How does the sun move across the area? So once you figure out those pieces, and I like to just draw a little sketch, you need to decide what method you want to use to get rid of the existing vegetation. If it's grass, that's pretty easy. You can smother it. Remove it with a sod machine and then go compost that sod and make great soil in a year. You can spray it with an organic herbicide. It'll take, probably 3 or 4 applications. And I recommend if you're doing using a herbicide that 10 days or so before you want to do the herbicide, you put down a natural nitrogen like a blood meal or alfalfa meal, and that will cause the plants to really grow and become really lush, so they put a lot of their energy into the plant above the ground. Roots are not as energized at that moment. And so basically when you spray it with the organic herbicide, it really has a much stronger effect on it, and it's much harder for the plant to recover because it's gone and put all its energy into the, plant that's above the ground. You can burn it with a propane torch. It depends on how big the area is. The only problem I have with that is, of course, it's a fossil fuel, and we try to, work a little more sustainably than that. And then some people literally just stop mowing and introduce meadow plants by taking, using container plants and planting them in the meadow and letting them grow up with the grasses that already exist there, and then mowing it down, in the late winter or early spring. So that's how I would get started. You also have to decide, as I said before, to whether you're going to use seed or you're going to use live plants. And that all, is a lot of it's budgetary, and also how big is the area and how fast do you want it to establish.
And I guess you could use a combination of plants and seeds, too.
First off, you can also use a combination of all these methods as
right.
Well. Like, for example, if you've smothered the area and you take up the smothered material and you've got some stubborn plants, you may have to hit them with a propane torch or do something else with those particular plants or dig them up. But the problem with using seed and live plants really is the maintenance for the seeded meadow or prairie is to cut it back. In the first year, you got to keep it cut back to about 12 inches. So if you've already put a live plant in there, then
right.
You're either cutting around that live plant or,
right.
And there are some meadow plants that are harder to establish from seed. So in the spring of the third year, when the meadow is seeded meadow is already established, you can introduce, you know, those harder to, you know, maybe established by seed plants like false blue indigo, for example,
yeah.
and, you know, introduce that as a live plant. But up until you kind of create your sort of a maintenance nightmare if you try to combine the two.
At the beginning, yeah.
Right.
All right.
Hope
Good
that helps, Leroy.
Good tips. Thank you for calling. Let's turn to Christine next in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thank you very much for the show. My question is, do you have any suggestions or recommended resources when you're the first lawn in the subdivision with a lot of traditional landscaping? So if you're going to be the first person leading with the natural landscaping, you know, what are there techniques that you can use so that your lawn kind of is not standing out too much, but you're starting to incorporate these ideas?
Mm-hmm.
If I understand what you're saying, you're saying how do we incorporate a natural landscape with a sort of a traditional landscape?
I guess so. I'm just thinking if you're the first person who's trying.
Yeah, what are the neighbors going to say?
Well, there are some really good. First off, that you this is a great question. One of the things that we, when we want to establish something more natural and has all the benefits, you know, for wildlife and creating a balanced ecosystem where the natural enemies will take care of each other, we need to try to educate or talk to our neighbors about what we're doing and why, and explain the benefits to the neighbor. And one of the things that's very helpful is just to start small. Don't go freak them out, you know, with something that's they're gonna say, "Oh my God, look at that." There's a big myth that natural landscapes or meadows deplete the or reduce the property value. That's really not borne out. I visited a development in Wisconsin, and they actually sold the houses because there was a prairie through the green space where normally just have lawn. Now they've got you know, this wonderful prairie that they don't mow, and it's beautiful, and it takes the runoff from the roofs of the houses, and it's just fabulous. So I think that if you talk to your neighbors and start small, and it's very important to mow you know, borders around the meadow or prairie planting, makes it look more intended. And people, and actually, that's one reason I use meadowscaping as part of the title, because people, they if they can start to think of a meadow as just another type of a landscape, then I think it becomes more acceptable to them. But you really need to be somebody who wants to talk to the neighbors about it, and you know, kind of get their buy-in. And I think that's the best way to approach it.
You know, one of our actually we've had several callers mention this, but on previous programs, but one caller, they've all said they put up a little sign on the front of the lawn and explained what they were doing, and said we're putting in a natural landscape. And I know the last caller said it was really kind of fun. People would stop and ask them information and ask them what, you know, more questions about it. Once they saw that this was some sort of planned thing, and you know, there was a sign to say it.
I actually say that in the book, you know, as the way to do it is you really show them what you're doing, and it can be fun. I mean, the kids can make their own, you know, kind of poster or sign, and it's quite fun, I think. And I, you know, people will get used to a different landscape if it exists. You know, it has to first. We have to put them there, and then people will want them.
Yeah.
I've had people tell me that, or call me and say, you know, they did a natural landscape in the beginning. There was a lot of resistance, and now people are coming over and asking how they can do it. So, you know, it really is about showing by example and getting out there and you know.
Yeah.
Educating or just really helping to inform people about what this is all about.
Yep. There you go, Christine. Thank you for calling. Chris in Greenfield, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Well, the lady in front of me just kind of stole my thunder.
Ah.
That's actually the question that I had. So I'll kind of change it. Could you offer some suggestions as to what kind of plants to start with? I'm already starting to kind of smother the grass. I've got some mulch down and things like that in a relatively small area. So maybe if you could offer some suggestions as to what to start with in a relatively small area. And again, not to freak the neighbors out, as the last caller said.
Right. Well, again, this is a great question, because we really do want to have sort of a sense of place. And so you might not want to plant a very large switchgrass in the front yard. But you want to go, in the book I have a plant list, but first you want to find plants that are native to your area. And then you check out the height of the plant, you know, because they vary from, you know, 5 inches to 9 feet, you know, so it just really depends on what your area is like. But one of the important concepts of a meadow is to mix grasses and flowers. Just to have flowers is not the best idea, because grasses really give the meadow you know, some structure. And a little bluestem is a lovely blue-green grass, a native grass that's native to almost all of the United States and does well in and that's another thing you have to decide. What is your soil like? Is it wet there? Those are the first things that you have to consider, is what is your site? You know, how dry, how wet? Is it just sort of average garden soil? Once you determine that, then you can then move on to planning or selecting the plants and deciding where you want them in this area. But you need to go, so depending if you want a medium sort of garden, you're going to want plants like little bluestem, sneezeweed, monarda, that's bee balm. And then you want to also make sure you've got things blooming, you know, throughout the season. So looking at your plant list, if you've got the book, you could see when they bloom. Lots and lots of nurseries have plant finders. You just put in what your requirements are, like, I don't want a plant that's taller than 3 feet, and, you know, I want it to be native or whatever. And it'll pop up with a list of plants that, you know, will work in your situation. So that's the where I would go with that. And particularly wherever you are in the country, you're going to want to look at your native plant nurseries and see what they're carrying. And again, I can't say enough about Neil DeBole's nursery, Prairie Nursery. So good resources online in terms of identifying the plants that you could use in your particular situation.
There you go. Thank you very much, Chris, for calling. Gloria in Dodgeville, we turn to you. Hi, Gloria.
Yeah, hi. I have two things. I have a comment and then I have a question. The comment is talking about mowing your yard, mowing your lawn. We have an extremely large lawn, and we went to getting an electric lawnmower where we just plug the charger in, and it works great. It uses very little electricity. We have no smell of the fumes of the gasoline. It's just really, really awesome. There are different companies, products that you can buy that are electric lawnmowers, and I'll tell you, there's no cord with these. They're much better than they used to be. We have like a little catcher on the back, and we use that for mulch in our garden, and it has worked really great. So that's my comment. And now this, I would like to ask a question. I don't know if you're talking about trees or not, but I would like to plant some trees, but I don't know if I need to go to a landscaper, because I don't know exactly where to plant the trees. Now, is that a question that you can answer?
I would suggest that you do go to your nursery and talk to them about, and you can look up the cultural requirements for any plant and see if your site, you know, will support that plant. Like, how much sun do you have? You know, where exactly did you want to plant it? So it again goes back to
doing a little research on your own property as to what you have. Because let me tell you, for years and years, I used to just buy a plant because I thought, wow, that's a great plant. And then I'd go put it out in the garden in a place that I thought I'd like to see it in, and it died. So, and it was because I didn't pay enough attention to what that plant's cultural needs were. And so those are the important factors in deciding whatever plant you want to put in to a site.
Yeah. And Gloria, if you go to the UW Extension Learning Store, there are some landscape design publications published by UW Extension that also can give you some sort of design ideas when it comes to planting trees and shrubs in a lawn. So I'd certainly recommend that, UW Extension Learning Store, and that'll pop up, and there are lots of free publications, and you can read them right online.
And Larry, you make a great point as well. I mean, in the book, I have devoted an entire section to the extension services. They're underutilized all over the country, and they have fabulous information that's really particular to your area. So that I hope people start to make use of those facilities, because they really are there to help you manage your landscape better.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for the comment on the electric mower. Another caller I should mention phoned in to remind us that pretty much now it's impossible to purchase a new two-cycle mower. They're mostly all four-cycle now, so they're better than the two-cycle for sure in terms of gas and everything else. So just wanted to mention that. And thanks again, Gloria. Martha in Glendale, your turn. Hi, Martha.
Oh, thank you. Wonderful program, wonderful subject. And we have ordered the book and are eagerly awaiting it. And
Thank you very much.
I would just like to mention that tomorrow at Cardinal Stritch University, the Wild Ones chapters in Milwaukee are sponsoring a natural landscaping seminar that will answer many of your callers' questions, many of them. So if they want information about it, they can call. Oh, shoot, I need to have this ready.
I bet it's on the website.
It is, but I've got it right here. It's 414-299-9888, extension 3.
Extension 3. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. The Wild Ones, as you were saying, Catherine, is a great group. Cardinal Stritch tomorrow. There's an event. And the number, 414-299-9888. Or just go online to Wild Ones, and you will get that information. Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. Actually, there's a website. Well, if you just go to the Wild Ones, Wisconsin, you're going to get that information.
Right.
And Catherine, a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I enjoyed our conversation, and hopefully we can have you back.
Well, thank you very much. And I just wanted to remind people they can always visit my website. It's themeadowproject.com, where we are, launching an effort to really start to establish meadows across the country and go to schools and help educate the kids on natural landscapes.
And it's,
so it's a big effort that we're started. We're forming a nonprofit, and so we're out there seeking other people who want to partner with us. And
there you go.
There, it's going to be a thing of beauty.
TheMeadowProject.com. Catherine Zimmerman, our guest, author of Urban and Suburban Meadows. We'll try and get her back. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.